You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So this morning, producer Kelly talked to the Opportunities Party deputy leader, Jeff Simmons. She asked him about his career move from being an economist to a politician and his aspirations in Parliament.
I mean, all sorts of stuff I've done through the years, economic, social and environmental policy. And I started off out of university. I went straight to New Zealand Treasury and then got a job in Wellington, moved down there back in 1999. And worked for 4.5 years at the New Zealand Treasury doing economic and social policy. And then I went overseas. I met a British girl and ended up working over there for an economic development. So it was a bit more on the ground, hands-on sort of stuff, working with businesses. And then moved back to New Zealand and was lucky enough to get a job at the Morgan Foundation working for Gareth. That's really where I was able to get into the environmental side of things as well. Wrote 4 books working with him and ended up running the Morgan Foundation.
Cool. And then is that just how you got into politics? Was that sort of your...
Yeah. I mean, last October, Gareth was on the road to... You know, Gareth's always had people say to him, you should go into politics, and he's always been... because he doesn't want to buy into that kind of game. And he was actually literally on the road to Damascus doing an aid trip in Syria, and the convoy in front of him got bombed, and so he had a couple of days, reevaluating his life, and called us from Syria and said, okay guys, I want you to get ready to launch a political party when I get back. I'll be back in 3 weeks. Yeah, and both of us have been involved with, through various guises, have been involved with recommending things to governments throughout the years, ways that New Zealand could be better. And we can see lots of ways that New Zealand could be better, not better economically and trade that off against socially and environmentally, but we could actually be better on all those counts. There's actually win-wins out there, but they require tackling some pretty politically gnarly issues. And so politicians don't want to touch them, like taxing the family home. I mean, that's a thing that is absolutely, politically unpalatable, but we know from all our work that it would make New Zealand a fairer and richer society. So we figured, well, if the politicians won't have this conversation with the country, let's give them this option. Let's offer them this opportunity.
So, kind of moving into that, the Opportunities Party sort of first policy about the tax reform.
Yep.
And you're saying, under the reform, we propose that around 80% of the public will be better off, and the 20% that aren't can afford that.
Yep.
What does that kind of look like?
Well, what we're proposing to do is tax the money that is that you put into housing and other major assets, just the same way that we tax a bank deposit. So we assume that the money in those assets is returning at least the same rate as a bank deposit. So, at the moment, that would be a return. Most bank deposits are probably about 4% at the moment. And so we say, right, well, that asset should be returning about 4%, and we'll tax it on the basis of at your marginal tax rate on that basis. So, if your tax rate is 25% and you're earning 4% return, then that's effectively a 1% tax on the value of the equity that you have in that asset.
So this is different to a capital gains tax?
Yes, it is. This is levied each and every year. Capital gains tax is only levied when the asset is sold. And we've seen from overseas, the countries that have our sort of tax perform better than countries that have a capital gains tax.
Right.
Capital gains tax is easier to understand because you think, okay, I've sold this asset, I've got the cash, I can pay the tax. But actually, a capital gains tax disincentivizes people to sell assets. So you actually get people holding on to assets longer than they should.
And a monopoly on the assets.
That's right, yeah. By having the tax levied each and every year, it provides an incentive to use that asset, you know, wisely. And the big issue that we see in New Zealand, where this asset would make a difference, where this tax would make a difference, is in land banking, because
right.
we have people sitting on land making money doing nothing, just because they know that if they hold on to the land, it'll the demand for housing will rise. And they will be able to sell the land for an even higher price at a later date.
Mm.
This kind of tax would be a kick in the bum for those landowners to say, right, get on and build houses on your land.
So that is that sort of your main solution to the housing crisis at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So our tax would not only stop speculation in housing, so we'd stop seeing house prices rise and start seeing people investing in businesses and in building houses, but also because of that, what I mentioned, that it would start to penalise land bankers, we would start to see people building houses as well. So it really hits the demand and the supply side at the same time.
Mm. The unconditional basic income, obviously, I'm very interested in as an 18 to 23 year old.
Awesome.
So that is $200 a week, just unconditionally. Doesn't matter if you're studying, doesn't matter if you're working.
Well, we've got massive upheaval around the world with economies. You know, the robots are coming, they're taking people's jobs, and it's not just the low skilled jobs anymore. Sometimes it's highly skilled jobs. Just look at what's happening in IRD and in accounting right now with companies like Xero. You know, digital disruption is massive. We're about to get driverless cars and trucks start rolling out across the world, and that is the number one, that's the biggest occupation in the entire world, is driving stuff. And all those guys, mostly guys, are going to lose their jobs over time. So we've got, you know, massive upheaval of the likes that we haven't seen since really that industrial revolution where people started moving into cities. And really that unconditional basic income tries to underwrite that. It says, look, we don't know what the jobs of tomorrow are going to be, but we do know that, you know, you're going to be moving in and out of jobs, you're going to need to retrain, and we just want to provide you with a basic level of support regardless of what happens. And there's no way that a complex, targeted welfare system can really keep up with that level of upheaval.
And where does that $200 a week come from?
Well, in the example of the 18 to 23 year olds, we have taken it from instead of Stephen Joyce's tax cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the short term answer. But really, in the longer term, the goal is to provide one for everyone, an unconditional basic income for everyone. And we would get that in two ways. Firstly, from the asset tax that I was talking about before. I mean, I think once that's really in place, it's going to take time to put in place. It's going to take time to slowly increase over time. But the thing with that asset tax is it doesn't just apply to houses. It applies to all capital, all assets. So this is actually how we tax the robots, you know, that are taking our jobs. So actually that tax would hit Apple, it would hit Google, it would hit Facebook, it would hit Uber, it would hit all of these organizations that we're struggling to get tax out of, and that revenue plus, you know, which is going to increase over time, the more Ubers and driverless cars and things like that that we have, that sort of a revenue is going to increase over time. The money would also come from simplifying the tax system. So if everyone had an unconditional basic income, we could have a flat tax rate of, you know, say 25 or 30%, and you'd still have a very progressive system because everyone's getting an unconditional basic income, everyone's having their assets taxed, which is incredibly progressive, but you can have this very simple flat rate tax system, which actually, because people can't evade it, it'll raise a lot more money.
Should you make 5%, which is your goal for this election, what is the most attractive coalition for the Opportunities Party at this point? Might as well ask.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can tell you who the least attractive coalition partner is, and that's anything involving Winston. Because really, he is the antithesis of what we're trying to do. You know, we are, in some ways, a lot of people that are attracted to New Zealand First are attracted to TOP as well, because we're both anti-establishment. We both think that Labour and National have had a long time in power and not really done a lot. But there's a real difference in the way that we operate. You know, we are very strongly evidence-based and progressive, whereas Winston is very populist, tends to ignore the evidence when it suits him, and appears to want to take us back to the 1970s rather than forward. You know, National and Labour, they both do a pretty good job of the day-to-day management of government, and neither, you know, we don't want to do that sort of stuff. We want to focus on the long-term issues and give them a boot to actually take action on the long-term issues. So we're quite happy to work with either Labour Greens or National. There's elements of what both parties are talking about that we can work with, and there's elements of both sides that we struggle with.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.